Welcome back to Eco Talk. We've been speaking about the quality of the air we breathe, and we're going to take a break now and step outside and breathe some very fresh air. Going fishing, in fact. Few sports have produced a stronger mythology than fly fishing. It's even been likened to a sacred rite, as in the novella and movie, A River Runs Through It.
In our family, there was no clear line between religion and fly fishing. My father was a Presbyterian minister and a fly fisherman.
And that, of course, is Robert Redford from the movie. And now there's a new book out about fly fishing by George Black. He's an editor at the NRDC's On Earth magazine. It's called Casting a Spell, The Bamboo Fly Rod and the American Pursuit of Perfection. As part of our ongoing partnership with the Natural Resources Defense Council, Daniel Heinerfeld sat down to talk with George about his favorite pastime.
George, before we get into the book, let's just set the scene. What is it like to catch a trout with a fly rod?
For me personally, it is a combination of a contact with a natural creature of great beauty. It's usually an experience of being in harmony with beautiful natural places, because that tends to be where trout live. They need cold, oxygenated water, so they tend to live in beautiful places. And I have to confess, it's always tinged with a little bit of ambivalence, because I think what it does is it puts you in touch with a very deeply buried part of our original nature, which is hunter and gatherer. And there is always a sense of guilt or some ambivalence about catching a fish. A lot of, frankly, rubbish gets written about how this is a battle of wits between two creatures. I mean, these guys have very small brains. You're not exactly outwitting them. But there is a high degree of skill involved, and that's very satisfying.
You write that rod makers always kept alive a set of values that have never been so important to preserve as they are today. What are those values, and why are they so important now?
Well, I think there's a couple of different things. One is an attachment to tradition. These are people who have a great regard for the time when what a person thought in his brain and what a person did with his hands were very, very connected. I think that is something that has clearly been lost. And I think there are also people who have great respect for working with natural organic materials. Not to say they're all environmentalists, far from it, but I think that sense of working with your hands with something, you know, maybe it's the particular kind of wood that is used for a violin or the particular ingredients that go into a lot of different handmade crafts. And these guys who make fly rods feel the same way about the raw material they work with, which actually only comes from one single valley in China.
As you discuss at various points in the book, fly fishing is seen as a sign of class and affluence. And I'm just wondering, first of all, how did that originate?
Well, I think it originated in England, because the whole idea of leisure, as we know it today, recreation, really started at a time when a lot of English gentlemen had private lands, they had time on their hands, they had hereditary wealth. Then it was brought over to this country originally by British military officers. It became associated with a certain, you know, gentleman of leisure. And that grew, I think, in parallel really with the first stirrings of conservationism and environmentalism, because a lot of these people who began to travel to the countryside to indulge their pleasures got a pretty deep feeling for nature as a result, and began really the cult of the outdoors as we now know it.
So if there were more fly fishers, we'd have more environmentalists?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, fly fishers come in all sorts, and you'll find a lot of people who enjoy this sport actually increasingly in the last 20 or 30 years as a kind of extreme sport, which never made any sense to me. But you get a lot of people who are into this for the competition and the size of the fish you catch and, you know, the bragging rights at the bar at night. That never appealed to me very much, but I don't want to idealize fly fishermen. They're not any higher kind of humanity than anyone else.
And you have a very particular reason that you cite in the book for rejecting that idea.
Well, as I say in the book, you know, Dick Cheney's a fly fisherman, so God help us.
Okay. Part of the book is really a history of outdoor recreation in America, which is something that you say the WASP gentry of the late 19th century essentially invented. What do you mean by that?
I think a lot of these people, when they began to go to places like the Adirondacks and Maine, and then later the mountains, wild places of California, they were very influenced by Thoreau. They had read Walden. They believed that city life made you soft and lazy, and they went in a pursuit of a certain kind of virtue. It also had a lot to do, of course, with the fact that most of the country at that point was being massively industrialized and massively polluted. So the idea of escaping to wild and natural places was something that was not really available to a lot of people, and there was not the transportation to go to these out-of-the-way places.
George, as you explain in the book, you actually don't eat most of what you catch. Why is that?
The thing about trout, there is a kind of almost a religion in fly fishing these days about catch and release, particularly in a state like Montana, which is the mecca for fly fishing in this country. The state of Montana has not put artificial hatchery-raised fish into its rivers for 40 years now. It's an entirely wild population, which makes it a wonderful experience. But if you caught those fish and kept them, they would disappear pretty quickly. The one exception is every spring, and this is, I suppose, at some level a recognition of our hunter-gatherer history. Once a year, early in the season in springtime, there is, in Connecticut, in fact, there are some secret places I know that have very large populations of wild brook trout. And if I know the stream can take it, then once a year I'll normally take a few of those and cook them for breakfast. And there's a kind of ritual quality to that. And how do I cook them? Put them in a little bacon fat, pan fry them for a couple of minutes each side, squeeze lemon juice over them. That's all you need.
And thank you, George Black, for that recipe. And thank you, Daniel Heinerfeld, for that report. If you'd like to read an excerpt from the book, and again, the title is Casting a Spell, The Bamboo Fly Rod and the American Pursuit of Perfection, you can go online to www.nrdc.org, click on Earth. And on the next edition of EcoTalk, Jerry McNerney is running for Congress in the district where one of the environment's biggest foes has presided since 1992. Can Jerry McNerney defeat Richard Pombo and stop the plundering? Tune in tomorrow to find out. Want to thank our sponsor, Union of Concerned Scientists, a science-based nonprofit combining independent research and citizen action to achieve innovative solutions for a healthy environment and a safer world. Find them on the web at ucsusa.org, and you can find us on the web at www.ecotalk.net. See you next time.